In the program Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on rain havoc in Tamil Nadu. The participants are Professor V.K. Sharma, Indian Institute of Public Administration, Nagraj Advay, Member, India Climate Justice, and Murali Krishnan, Senior Journalist, who initiates and moderates the discussion.
The southern city of Chennai in Tamil Nadu reels under heavy floods following record-breaking rainfall and overflowing lakes. Hundreds have been killed, thousands left homeless or stranded in their homes without food or electricity. Telephone services too have been taken a hit in many areas. A sprawling city now with 4.6 million people has been affected in one way or the other by the devastating floods caused by torrential rains. This downpour in the city and other coastal regions of Tamil Nadu have broken records of over 100 years. Flights to and out of Chennai have been cancelled and the airport is shut till December 6th. Almost every important subway and the suburb has turned into a water body. Along with rainwater, sewages too has entered homes. In many parts, the water level has entered 5 feet deep, particularly in the upscale southern suburbs, whereas the lakes and swamps have been overshadowed. I come to you straight on, sir. The seriousness of the situation in Chennai can be gauged by the fact that all the personnel of all the three defense forces have been present to relief and rescue. How do you see the situation?
You are right that it was 35 centimeter rain, 350 millimeter, which is unprecedented. You rightly said that it is more than 100 years record and Chennai never faced this kind of scene. Though it is rainy season, but in 24 hours in case this much of rainfall is there and cities are not prepared. We are watching it since last 10 years. You see, 2005, Mumbai, 2010, 2012, 2014, Chennai is also facing flash flood continuously, I should say. But not of this kind. And no city is taking any lesson from this. This is unfortunate.
Can I come to you, Nagraj, after this? Is there a disconnect, therefore, Nagraj, with nature that is also manifest in the failure of planners, builders, administrators, and even common people to fathom the sheer power of natural events?
I think somewhere there's certainly a disconnect. There's also complete sort of focusing on one's own species. I would say there's three things, you know. I mean, I think one can't say for certain whether a single extreme event, and this is certainly an extreme event because the Met Department defines an extreme event as anything over 124 millimeters of rainfall in a single day. This certainly is an extreme event. The fact is it linked to climate change. Now, the science doesn't say that any single extreme event is necessarily climate change, but it's very likely that it is. There are many reasons why that's the case. If one looks at trends, now there's been a series of extreme events over the last, say, 50 years, which seems to be happening more frequently. That's one. Secondly, there's studies that show there's been a reduction in the frequency of moderate rainfall and an increase in the frequency of extreme events, again, over the last 50 years. Thirdly, this 2015 happens to be the hottest year that's going to be ever recorded, beating last year's record. Fourthly, there's been like 350 mm in a single day. It's long both in terms of the geographical spread. It's not just Chennai, you see. It's a whole northern Tamil Nadu, Andhra. And duration. This is the fifth trough that's happening and it's something that's the second round in a sense. And even this has been carrying on for 2 days, 3 days after something that happened a week ago. So there are many sort of collective evidence to say that to likely link it to climate change. It's very likely.
I wanted to ask you specifically, are India's cities prepared for extreme weather, events like rains, droughts, and cyclonic storms, which are becoming more frequent and intense? Are we prepared?
After disaster, we are prepared. For example, Mumbai.
After.
And this is unfortunate. You see, Visakhapatnam, this has happened. After disaster, now they are preparing everything. Mumbai, after 2005, today you see, they have all plans and everything in place. And community education, all these things, Mithi River, whatever development they are doing, they have some sense that what is urban planning and how it is related to risk reduction. But before disaster actually, and you rightly asked, this question is very critical. And I am saying again that when all these cities will be prepared, now we are talking about 100 smart cities. In case these smart cities, they are not taking care of disaster risk reduction, climate change adaptation, and all these things, then I think what kind of this smart city. One more point, friend rightly said that it may be climate change. I mean, we cannot because each and everything.
But some people have pointed to El Nino also. El Nino, okay.
So I agree with him. And the second thing which is quite possible is El Nino. Because we are seeing the temperature of Pacific and it is higher and Indian Ocean, it is cold. And that this is one reason that this much of moisture is coming and this much of rain is there and the reason. What I am saying is that all these things will continue. With this global warming, the things which we are discussing in Paris, these things will have to happen. But now there is a time, this is the right time that all the cities, including our capital, should have a preparedness. And for the extreme events, basically, you know, for which we are not prepared.
What's your call, Naga? Are we prepared? Do you think the fact is we've had enough of examples? We've had Uttarakhand, we have the Srinagar flash floods also. Absolutely. Are we prepared?
Well, actually, you see, we're actually going the other way. We are making ourselves less and less prepared. In every single case, I mean, even in this case, I mean, people have written about, you know, the shrinkage of wetlands, building an airport in the Adyar floodplains, all kinds, basically a shrinkage of various kinds of wetlands in places where the water could have seeped or drained out. Now, we also saw that in Bombay, like Professor Sharma said, we saw that in Uttarakhand with the blasting of mountainsides, irresponsible widening of roads, etc. We saw that in Kashmir. So in city after city, we're having this, essentially, we are making ourselves less and less, more and more vulnerable in a sense, you know, less and less resilient. You see, and we need to think about it at three levels. On the one end, there's climate change, and like I said, it's very likely credited to climate change what's happened in Chennai. At a second level, there's this kind of indiscriminate urban expansion and infrastructure kind of expansion. And there too, I think we need to go deeper and interrogate essentially what drives this expansion. It's not merely someone's mistake or someone's error. It's also a question of someone making profits. Is someone benefiting from this? And the third part is, what is the social context in which the impacts are felt? And also that social context is unequal. It's true that the impacts of climate change, assuming it is climate change, is felt by everybody. Like in the Chennai case, there were people stuck in the airport for hours. But the fact is that the inordinate impact are felt by people who live in bastis and jugis next to the Adyar River. And that's been the case again in every example. In Uttarakhand, it was workers who work in the tourism industry. In Kashmir, it was various kinds of people. In Bombay, it was the people from northern Bombay whose shanties collapsed in the 975 mm of rain. So it's very clear there's a certain unequal impact of what happens. So let's think of it at three levels, see?
So therefore, tell me, sir, you think there's a man-made problem in this state which has exacerbated this problem?
We don't call all these disasters natural disasters.
We don't?
We don't, because these are all man-made disasters now. I mean, we need rain. Chennai, you know, there is always shortage of water. And you are having 650 water bodies in Chennai, and you have reduced it to 27. So I think there is something wrong with the planning. And otherwise, you know, the water is required in all these cities. You name one city in the country which is having sufficient drinking water. So in this situation, when water resource management is a big issue, now we are saying that water is a problem, it is a disaster. So I think we are making it a disaster, basically. It's a very important resource. In case you revive these water bodies, like in Rajasthan, you know, people have done it. In Gujarat, you know, they have done it. So I think let us see bigger perspective, because otherwise we will be all the time, you know, saying that it is climate change. Definitely it is happening, and it will happen, you know, it will not stop. This is not the last disaster of this kind.
So Naga, therefore you think that our cities, you know, we saw Srinagar, we saw huge swathes of Uttarakhand in 2013 also. Do you think that we lack natural drainage and storage systems? Or the fact is it because of unbridled commercial construction, which has also fueled this?
I mean, different cities used to have sort of natural drainage flows, natural systems, lakes, ponds, even Delhi. I believe Delhi, and someone's doing a survey of the existing water bodies in Delhi, and I believe there are some 611, and there were many, many more earlier. The fact is these have all been encroached upon. Natural flows into the river have been stopped or made into sewage. I mean, the river itself, the Supreme Court, if I remember right, called the Yamuna sewage canal or something. If you look at its coliform levels, at the level where it leaves the city compared to where it comes in, it's like staggering. It's several hundred times. So it's something that we've actually damaged over time. And of course, it is, in a sense, the expansion of real estate, the expansion of urban housing. But again, let's be clear. This is not something that's benefiting the poor, because in this city and in Bombay and in many other cities, we actually shunted out the poor. The, you know, Nehru Place, you just name it, behind Ames. I've been to this place 20 years ago, where you actually taken people out of jugis and thrown them to the outskirts. the housing that's coming up on the floodplains or various other kinds of, or if you have official bodies or if you have Akshardham or in the case of Chennai, you've got the airport coming up on the floodplains. You see, it's something that, again, is not sort of socially neutral, and that's what's causing the problem, effectively.
For a person of your experience, sir, I just want you to bring it to this table. Is then, therefore, disconnect with nature that is also manifest in the failure of planners, builders, administrators, and even common people to fathom the sheer power of natural events?
In case you have ecosystem-based approach, in case you have environment in the center of all development, in case you think that disaster risk reduction is the mainstreaming in each and every thing, then definitely we can reduce this kind of disaster. Otherwise, you know, start from Barmer, Mumbai, I can give you 20 names, and 20 other names will come in years. Because these builders lobby and all that, you know, they are not bothered about.
Did we see the signs coming in Chennai? We saw a foretaste in terms of earlier rain.
People who are from there and they have sort of, you know, activists from there and so on, they have been talking about this for a long time. There's a sense that is, I mean, but the point is these people are not heeded to. People don't pay heed until you have a disaster where there's a complete urban collapse.
The Indian Institute of Science, they studied Chennai, they studied the number of cities, and they are saying all these things, you know, which you are talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's just say a couple of things. One is, you see, climate change, assuming it's linked to climate change again, it's not that it's going to just continue. The fact is it is going to intensify, because climate, we're only at the start of what is basically a steep upward curve, both in terms of temperature rise and in terms of impacts. And let's remember that these impacts are nonlinear. So you may have something that's happening now once in 50 years like Bombay, or once in 10 years like Chennai. It's going to happen once every 2 years. What are you going to do? You know, people have built their homes with great effort, and what if you have a rain like this once every 2 years?
Does it trouble you then, as it has happened in Uttarakhand, it's happened in many parts of this country also. We've seen these upheavals out there. So therefore, this mammoth rehabilitation, that task looms. And more importantly, after this calamities like this, doesn't that trouble all of us?
Definitely. Banaras, for example, you know, this is one of the oldest city. If you see the planning of Banaras, and if you see the drainage system and all, Srinagar, you know, one of the oldest city, basically. And if you see old Srinagar, it was not affected last year. It is just the new areas, you know, Jawahar Nagar and all these localities which are coming up, they were affected because they were the low-lying areas, they were the water bodies basically, they were the places where water was there basically. So I think this is one very critical point, that in urban planning, we are not doing this thing in our master plans in 10 years or 20 years plan. Then definitely each and every city will be affected, and huge losses will happen. This time also it is one disaster, more than 300 people died, about 5 million people affected, you rightly said. And you never know, because now all these reservoirs, basically we will have to release water, you know, because they are all overflowing.
Tagaraj, how important then, you know, the fact is we've seen all this happening in a period of not too far away, and we've yet not learned lessons. How important is it?
I mean, very clearly, I mean, urban planning is absolutely crucial. I mean, not so much to have smart cities, maybe to have wise cities, maybe have wisdom rather than smartness, in which we need to ensure hydrological flows. We need to undo the damage that is done, like Professor Sharma was talking about Bombay. We need to look at each city and see what damage has been done. What is it that we can undo? What is it that we cannot undo? From what we cannot undo, what lessons can we learn? Because there's a process of urbanization, you see, that's happening. So what is it that we've already done that's negative in a place, like either in Chennai and Mumbai, which we should not be repeating elsewhere in a process of urbanization that's going to intensify? We've got to have a process that's unavoidable. Both climate change is unavoidable and urbanization is unavoidable. That's both of them. But if the two are going to clash, it's going to be an absolute disaster. So what are the lessons we can learn, you see, from what? And I'll just say one thing is slightly different. Somewhere we tend to focus on our own species. These water bodies, these marshlands, these wetlands that have been lost, a whole lot of other animals and species depend upon them. A whole range of migratory birds, animals and various kinds, you see. Let's think a bit also about them. Let's sort of widen our sort of worldview and move the focus not just on ourselves, but also a little wider.
Professor Sharma, what is your take?
Today, we have a system, you know. You have National Disaster Management Authority. We have State Disaster Management Authority. But unfortunate part is that all these states are not taking it seriously. I'm working nowadays in Sikkim. And let me give you an example of Sikkim, that we have a plan for Gangtok. Mm-hmm. We have GIS-based mapping, you know, which area is more vulnerable for landslide, which area is prone, you know, for flash flood and all that. And seeing that plan, you know, the mayor and all these people are sensitized. And you might be knowing that it is one of the cleanest, you know, hill station. And so I think public awareness, educating our officers, having a good plan. We don't have only the state plan. We have city plan. We have a plan for Gangtok. We have plan for every district. So I think this is important. And some of these states, you will see the difference in coming years. Some of these states, you know, they are taking it very seriously. So the economic loss is much, much less. Otherwise, with the pace of development, with the urbanization which is going on in every state, I'm really worried that in case we don't plan cities, then the urban risk will increase, you know, every day.
Considering that, Nagaraj, that world temperatures, according to various estimates, are going to go up, and the fact that we have not factored that, and also the fact that we have climate upheavals in this country, do you think there has to be more course and direction in terms of planning?
I would think that the cities were not made for a temperature level that's feeling the impacts of, let's say, 2 degrees or 3 degrees Celsius. The infrastructure was not made for that. So also, like I said earlier, we're also undoing what infrastructure was made or whatever natural sort of systems we had. So very clearly, it requires us to act with much greater level of urgency at different levels. At one level, it is what to do with the city, like Professor Sharma was saying, with urban planning, etc. At another level, also the urgency that one needs to show at these, at say, the Paris COP. Because if one analyzes all the INDCs that have been submitted by all the governments, not just India, 147 INDCs, it shows that we are on course for a 3 degrees Celsius rise. That is, the world is an average rise. We've reached 1 degree Celsius this year, 2015, and it's going to be the hottest year ever, like I mentioned earlier. But all the INDCs, even if they are met, that is to say, even if all those commitments by US, by China, by India, etc. are met, we are on course for a 3 degree rise. 3 degree rise is staggering. At a 3 degree rise, studies have shown that the Indus dries up. What's going to happen to the agriculture in Pakistan? Where will they go? It's where different kind of feedbacks in the climate system begin to kick in. See, because the climate, like many systems, like our body in fact, is a complex system. You've got many elements and you've got feedback loops. And each feedback feeds on the other. To give you an example, if the Arctic ice melts, it's going to absorb much more heat into the system. We're already feeling, in my view, some of the impacts on Indian climate of an Arctic melting. See, if you look at some of the irregular rains and hailstones, in my view, they're probably linked to Arctic melting. I believe it's being studied at IIT in Pune. But that's only one kind of feedback, where less ice means more heat is absorbed. You see, and that loops in with others. So you've got different sort of elements kicking onto each other, right? And that is what is going to hit us. We talk lightly of 3 degrees as if it's like something small, but it's massive. We've not experienced that before in human history. So can these cities actually withstand something at 3 degrees? I'm really not sure. I mean, are you seriously concerned? I mean, where is the urgency? I don't see the urgency in Paris. I don't see it in the INDCs. I mean, what needs to be? This is like...
Professor Sharma, your urgency in the sense that Uttarakhand somehow did not fall into the public consciousness. I know why. Kashmir floods was also, should have been a real wake-up call. Chennai, because the fourth largest metropolis, you think we should now take serious concern now?
I think so. And everybody is thinking in this direction. I will give you one example. In April 2015, there was a Sindai conference on disaster risk reduction in Japan. And a Sindai framework is made. Our Honorable Home Minister was there. And we have signed that. And it is having one of the objectives that how we'll minimize number of deaths, how we'll minimize the qualitative basically, how we'll minimize the economic loss in the country. So I think this is the time that we should have a sort of political will. And at national level, we should show it that, look, we will not give for relief response, you know. We will give more for preparedness. We will give more for mitigation. We will give more, you know, for climate change adaptation. I think there should be some way that I'm a human being. In case anything happened, we should assist them. So I'm not against that. Why 2,000 crore or, you know, more given to Tamil Nadu? We should give. But I think we should identify some of the vulnerable. In Himalayan range, you know, how many cities? Shimla, sitting on bomb, basically. There are many cities I can list you, you know, about which immediately need work. And nobody is thinking about that. So I'm more worried about that as a person of disaster management. I started in almost this subject in this country. Of course, many things have happened since the 90s. I'm not saying that nothing has happened. But I think a lot can be done.
Nagaraj, how much are we focused on disaster preparedness then?
A couple of things, I think, in the urban context. One is, I would think that you need to, I think, probably more resilient housing, and particularly more resilient housing for the urban poor. Because clearly they are the ones who are facing the impacts of this kind of extreme rainfall inordinately, you see, whether you take a Bombay, whether you take now Chennai. Secondly, also the issue of public health, you see, and clearly after these kind of floods, possibly have a health sort of disaster on a very large scale. So one needs to have a kind of health sort of infrastructure in place beforehand, you see, to be able to withstand the kind of impacts. And I think like Professor Sharma said, actually one needs to anticipate. I mean, resilience also is about anticipation and making people more. One needs to look at cities very, very differently from what we have. We need to look at the relationship between cities and your water bodies, cities and your rivers, very, very differently from what we have. And think also of a transition of different kinds, including, let's say, a transition of energy. You'll take, for instance, the expansion of rooftop solar, which I think is necessary in every city. One reason why Germany has managed to expand its rooftop solar from a few hundred megawatts in 2001 to about 32,000 megawatts more recently is because there's been a massive expansion of grid-connected photovoltaic on rooftops. This is something that I'm sure can be pushed more in cities. How do they move away from sort of fossil fuels if people also don't get more engaged in that issue? And maybe you have both policy and people's engagement. It needs to be at both levels. So there's a different way one thinks of a city. Energy is one issue, maybe healthcare, housing, etc. But equity somewhere is central.
Well, Sharma, the fact is the National Disaster Management Force did pretty good work when we saw Cyclone Hudud. The fact is that we knew aware it's going to happen out there. So we evacuated people also. There have been one or two other instances also. I'm just saying, when we know that we are prepared out there, could we have anticipated what has hit Chennai? Could we have?
Today you have 12 battalion of National Disaster Response Force. And the question is, they are doing very good work. There is no doubt in it. Everybody is appreciating their work wherever they go, even in Nepal, even in Japan. They are doing good. Important is that every state should have a state disaster response force. In case you have a state disaster response force in Chennai and they work with the NDRF, they would have done much better work. Then there is no need of army. There is no need of air force. I think...
Are we lacking them?
Most of the states, they don't have it. Except two or three states, Bihar, Andhra Pradesh, Sikkim. We have the state disaster response force. We have volunteers. We have civil defense people trained in this exercise. I think community level preparedness is required. Because you see in Chennai, community is helping.
Can I just intervene now here? So, Devan Nagaraj, the fact is I've covered many sort of disasters also, Kashmir as well as Uttarakhand. Always the first response comes from the community, as we've seen absolutely right now in Chennai also. Am I right?
I think that's absolutely right. I think it's something that's also very heartening. It's something that also gives us hope that to the extent to which people are rushing to each other's aid, and it's happened at different levels in terms of, shelter, food, water, rescuing people, social media, people kind of reaching out in different ways, etc. And that clearly will continue to happen. But again, like Professor Sharma was saying, you also need to have the sort of institutional, both the resilience beforehand and the kind of, you build an institutional frame to be able to prepare for disaster. So I think that would differ from ecology and ecosystem to ecosystem, terrain to terrain. So what we need in Uttarakhand would be quite different from what we need in Chennai.
In your long years of experience, sir, after watching what is being played out in Chennai, what are the three important lessons which the Indian government needs to learn?
One is that every state, should take disaster management very seriously. And as I told you, that it is, I'm not saying that nothing is happening. It's happening. But after disaster, wherever disaster happens, the state wake up, and some of the state, they do excellent work, and they have the state level plan, they sensitize their people, they do public awareness and all that. This is one, that each and every state, you have 29 states today, union territories, each and every one, I think it should be mandatory that all the chief ministers, and there should be political will. There should be one, any party, anything, I think this is for humanitarian thing that we should work together.
What's the second one?
Second thing is that, which is very simple, disaster education. And Japan is one example, there's more resilience because people know that they are vulnerable.
After Fukushima?
For earthquake, but that was a different disaster. But even for natural disasters, after 1900, Tokyo and all these, places, they are more prepared because the community is aware. So I think this education awareness, this is second point which is there. Third is the volunteerism. I think Bangladesh is a very good example that you have 48,000 volunteers trained volunteers. I think we will have to do that. I mean, this is all ad hoc arrangement which we are doing. For example, in Chennai, now there are very good work people are doing. The social, you rightly said. But not like Bangladesh. In case there is a cyclone or anything, they know their job. Only Andhra Pradesh is having some coastal villages where there is village level committees and where there are volunteers, and in case there is any information. You see, in Hudud also, Visakhapatnam and this area was affected, but villages, they were not affected because of these volunteers. They took them to safer places, they took them to cyclone shelters, and villages, the losses were much, much less than the Visakhapatnam.
Which is the last point?
And last point is that now climate change should not be taken lightly. I think there should be climate change adaptation. We have many programs for mitigation and disaster risk reduction. They should go hand in hand. I mean, they should not be taken separately, basically, because the impact which we are seeing on natural disaster, this is because of climate change.
Nagaraj, what do you think could be the important takeaway lessons from Chennai? The fact is, we've seen this happen, you know, with periodic regularity. But Chennai obviously would be a stark reminder. What do you think could be the lessons learned?
I think the Indian government and all of us, in fact, need to operationalize policy on the assumption that climate change impacts are going to happen more and more frequently, because that is what the evidence shows us. This is the third urban disaster in the last 3 years. Also, let's not forget that in every season in the last 3 years, Kharif and Rabi, agriculture has got devastated on a massive scale. I mean, CSE came out with a report just last week which talked about what happened in March and April, where 18.2 million hectares was damaged. And every single season in the last 3 years, agriculture has got hit, and it's happening on a widening scale. So one, we need to, instead of, Honorable Minister said that it's not to do with climate change, I think we should instead assume it's to do with climate change and then work. If it doesn't, that's all right. But we assume that it is going to happen more and more frequently and prepare on that level. That's one. Secondly, we need clearly a more urgent transition away from fossil fuels and coal. And I do know that there's an expansion of solar power, including rooftop photovoltaic, but
you think that would have contributed to this?
I'm just saying that what does one look at in a broader scale? So I'm just saying that we need to also think of bringing other concerned actors into the dialogue, bring in collectors, bring in unions before you frame your INDC, and talk about what the transition might be away from fossil fuels. You see, one knows one needs coal for years to come, but what would be the nature of the transition? What about people who are affected? What about workers in the thermal plants whose health is being affected? What about mining communities who are being affected? Bring them into the dialogue to dialogue about the transition. And thirdly, I think at Paris, I would think that one needs to move towards natural allies, which are your poorest countries, your neighbors like Bangladesh, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, etc., various other LDCs, the island states, and pressurize the developed countries to actually commit more than they have. And I would think that conditionally, India's commitment in the INDC is quite modest. The commitment of 33-35% reduction emissions intensity by 2030 is quite modest. Studies have shown that we could do 40% without too much difficulty. So I think we could conditionally say that if the US or EU or China make a significantly higher kind of rise, India could possibly go slightly higher than 30, but it should be conditional. So one needs to work at different levels. It's not just dependent on the government. It depends on all of us.
Who are the stakeholders out here?
I think all of us are. I mean, surely what Chennai has shown us is that all of us are completely, and we need to also engage in this much deeper than we have, individually and collectively. It needs to be at different levels simultaneously.
Valuable lessons have to be learned from the Chennai disaster, and I hope that now things will look forward for people in Chennai, but I hope things turn out better. Thank you.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on rain havoc in Tamil Nadu. The participants are Professor V.K. Sharma, Indian Institute of Public Administration, Nagaraj Advay, Member, India Climate Justice, and Murali Krishnan, Senior Journalist, who initiated and moderated the discussion. The program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of All India Radio. You can also listen to this program on our website, newsonair.nic.in. You may email your opinion about this program at airnsdtalks@gmail.com.